fall. Maybe it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lineup this evening, of some very, very excellent clips, and we're going to delve into the modern medical model. What was that all about? So we're going to give a little bit of an overview and go back to history with Eustace Mullins, who's the author of Murder by Injection. And he gives about a 9-minute interview in a hotel lobby that I found, but it's very fascinating and very insightful. And he is the author of Murder by Injection. You can find it on the web. It's free, a PDF somewhere, and get it, download it, and read it. So here we go with that interview.
It's a very powerful organization, as though nobody had written a book about it. So I found a little book at the Library of Congress called The Drug Trust by a man named Morris Beale. And he was a Washington news reporter whose wife had had some minor ailment, and she went to the doctors, and she was so mistreated that it made her husband furious. And so he started looking at the medical profession, and he was appalled by what he found out. So he started studying the medical profession, and he wrote a little book about 20 pages long called The Drug Trust. And on the first page of this book, he said that he had found out that every drug manufacturer in the United States was controlled by John D. Rockefeller. Well, I thought that was a very foolish statement. I couldn't believe that. And so I just decided to do a little more research and show that he'd kind of exaggerated. I wasn't calling him a liar, but I just didn't think he had his facts right. So as I looked into it, I found out that indeed every drug company in the United States was controlled by the Rockefellers, because it was very obvious on the list of directors of every major drug company in the United States were people from Standard Oil, and from Chase Manhattan Bank, and from other Rockefeller companies. So it was right there in front of me. There was no arguing about it. John D. Rockefeller.
So the man was right.
The man was right to the right. Well, he was a newspaper reporter, and so he knew what he was talking about, but I just simply could not absorb that, because I knew that John D. Rockefeller was the owner of Standard Oil of New Jersey, the greatest monopoly in the world. And in my naivete, I'm a very country boy, I'm very naive, and I thought, if this is the richest man in the world, and he has the greatest corporation in the world, what does he want to fool around the medical profession for?
Yeah.
Because that wasn't a very highly paid profession in those days, but it was part of the control. And he saw new worlds to conquer, and he took over the entire medical profession in the United States. He started some of his hirelings at... He had three brothers working for him named Flexner, Abraham and Bernard and Richard Flexner. And Abraham Flexner was one of his lieutenants, and he commissioned him to make a study of the entire medical profession. And so Abraham worked on it about 8 months, and he came back with a study recommending the revamping of the entire medical profession. At that time, most Americans either went to allopathic physicians are naturopathic physicians, homeopathic physicians. Homeopathic and
naturopathic.
That was the medicine of the United States. It depended mostly on organic substances and natural substances. It worked very well. The Americans at that time were the healthiest people in the world. And they were so vigorous that you can't believe it, because there were no automobiles, and most Americans did not have horse and carriages, and they had to walk everywhere. And so
plus they were hard workers.
They were hard workers. They worked very hard, and they walked 25 miles a day. And they were in very good shape. And that's what they should be doing today. So anyway, Abraham Flexner submitted his report to Rockefeller, and he agreed with it and told him to go ahead with it. And so at that time, Rockefeller was the most hated man in the United States, and he was trying to set up a Rockefeller Foundation. But he was so hated that Congress refused to, even with wholesale bribing, they refused to authorize the Rockefeller Foundation. So he thought it was more clever, because at that time, J.P. Morgan had set up U.S. Steel Corporation, which was an amalgamation of the Carnegie interests and other steel companies, and created a world steel monopoly, just like the oil monopoly. And so, you see, Carnegie was a little Scotchman who became a very wealthy man through the coal operation and the manufacture of steel. And he became one of the richest men in the world. And as he grew older, he devoted his work to his life to charity. He set up libraries all over the United States. He was really a very good man. And he was a virtuous man, which Scotch people are. They're thrifty and they're very virtuous. So, because I'm Scotch myself, my mother was a muse, and from Scotland. So anyway, as a virtuous man, Carnegie wanted to give away his money. He didn't want anything to do with it, or he didn't want to manage it or dictate how it was used. And so when he set up the five Carnegie foundations, he specified that he would have no personal interest in the operation of any of them. So he had five huge
foundations
to indulge in philanthropy, and he himself would have nothing to do with it. And so when Rockefeller learned about these five foundations, he immediately rushed in and put people in charge of them, and they became Rockefeller foundations. And so,
with Carnegie's money.
With Carnegie's money. And and Carnegie thought he was being very virtuous in these millions of dollars being spent for philanthropic use. But Rockefeller had a different opinion. He thought that philanthropy should serve his business interests, and so all Rockefeller philanthropies became part of the Rockefeller business empire. He thought this was just good business. It worked out pretty well, because all the Rockefeller philanthropies helped the Rockefeller business interests.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rockefeller took over the Carnegie revamping of the medical profession, and they issued a report in 1913, the same time that they adopted the Federal Reserve Act, that that the number of doctors in the entire United States should be cut by about two-thirds, and they adopt a whole new system called the allopathic system of medicine from Germany.
Which is drugs.
Well, drugs.
Artificial.
Well, the allopathic German system depended on radical surgery and long hospital stays and heavy use of drugs. And so this Rockefeller thought this was terrific. And so they've been on it. They've been on allopathic system ever since. Almost overnight, neuropathy and homeopathy disappeared in the United States. In fact, they practically became illegal.
Yeah.
Because as the legislatures under Rockefeller's leadership, he set up the American League of Municipalities, which controlled all the small towns in the United States, and the American Association of State Governments, which controlled all the state governments in the United States, including the legislatures. And he used the state legislatures to draft new methods for controlling doctors and hospitals. And so all hospitals and all doctors had to be licensed through state legislature, which sounded wonderful if you didn't know what was going on. That you had to go through John D. Rockefeller to get a medical license and a hospital license.
Wow.
That's what they amounted to. And that's the system we have today. And today we've become the sickest nation in the world and the most expensive medical care in the world, except you never get well. Which seems to work out for everybody except the patients.
Where it's good for the doctors, isn't it?
Good for the doctors.
It's drug companies.
Oh, yeah. So everybody's happy except the poor patients. And whenever you go to a doctor today and he prescribes a medicine for you, he says, you're going to have to take this medication for the rest of your life. because it's against AMA principles to ever cure anybody. They have actually brought doctors up on charges of curing people. And they've drummed some of them out of the AMA for that very reason, because you're curing people. Because this might be the right thing to do, but from a business standpoint, it's better to keep them sick and keep them buying the medicine, which they buy from the Rockefeller drug companies, and go to the Rockefeller hospitals, and everybody's happy.
And now they have the scam where if you can't afford it, the government's going to buy the drugs from the Rockefellers and give it to you, right?
Well, that's why they have the Medicare system, because they developed Medicare. You know, I point out in my book, Murder by Injection, that for many years the AMA spent millions of dollars in Congress to fight Medicare, because it was called government medicine, and they didn't want, the doctors were very independent, and they didn't want the government to control their business. Well, they wound up as employees of the government, and that's what happened.
And now this new drug act, they're going to supply the drugs to the people that can't afford it with the taxpayers' money, but the drug companies will still get the money.
They get the money.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the people are buying drugs today and medications, like elderly people like myself, they couldn't afford the drugs, and so the government would pay for them.
What a racket.
Well, it shows that these people are good businessmen.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. I mean, they're not very ethical, though.
Well, you and I could never think of such a diabolical plan.
Eustace says that you and I could not think up such a diabolical plan, but now Tucker Carlson is really attacking Fossey on the waffling that he's done, the outright miscarriage of authority in misadvising Trump and others. So here we go with what Tucker is doing, attacking Fossey, rightfully so. Here we go now with Tucker.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. The utter fraudulence of Tony Fauci is obvious now, and it's widely acknowledged, but it was not always obvious. In March of last year, we interviewed Fauci on this show. We treated him with respect. We took his answers seriously. We're Americans, so we assumed the man in charge of protecting the U.S. from COVID must be rational and impressive. We also assumed he must be honest, but we were wrong. It soon became clear that Tony Fauci was just another sleazy federal bureaucrat, deeply political and often dishonest. More shocking than that, we then learned that Fauci himself was implicated in the very pandemic he'd been charged with fighting. Fauci supported the grotesque and dangerous experiments that appeared to have made COVID possible. We came to these conclusions incrementally, spurred by evidence that accumulated over the course of a year. Tonight, we have the mother lode. Thanks to a Freedom of Information request from BuzzFeed, we have thousands of emails to and from Anthony Fauci. They go back to the early winter of 2020. Collectively, they show that from the beginning, Tony Fauci was worried that the public might conclude COVID had originated at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Now, why would Tony Fauci be concerned that Americans would conclude that? Possibly because Tony Fauci knew perfectly well that he had funded gain-of-function experiments at that very same laboratory. The emails prove that Fauci lied about this under oath. Consider this exchange, which began the evening of January 31st, 2020. It was a Friday just before midnight. The first email came from an immunologist called Christian Anderson, who works at the Scripps Research Institute in La Jolla, California. Anderson warned Fauci that COVID appeared to have been possibly manipulated in a laboratory. Quote, the unusual features of the virus make up a really small part of the genome, less than 0.1%. So one has to look really closely at all the sequences to see that some of the features potentially look engineered. The next day, on February 1st, Tony Fauci wrote back, thanks, Christian. Talk soon on the call. Fauci then sent an urgent email to his deputy, a man called Hugh Auchincloss. The subject of that email, in all caps, was important. Quote, Hugh, it is essential that we speak this AM. Keep your cell phone on. Read this paper as well as the email that I will forward. You will have tasks today that must be done. Attached to that email was a document. It was entitled, quote, Barrick, Shi et al., Nature Medicine, SARS gainoffunction.pdf. Now, the Barrick in the attachment referred to Ralph Barrick, a virologist based in the U.S. who collaborated with the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Barak worked with a woman called Dr. Shi Shengli, known as the Bat Lady because she manipulates coronaviruses that infect bats. She was the Shi in the attachment. Now, keep in mind that during the questioning from Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky fairly recently, Tony Fauci denied that this same Ralph Barak had conducted gain-of-function research. Again, this is the Ralph Barak in Fauci's attachment, which was entitled Barak, Shi et al., SARS gain-of-function.pdf. And yet, under oath before the United States Congress, Fauci denied this.
Dr. Barrett does not doing gain-of-function research, and if it is, it's according to the guidelines, and it is being conducted in North Carolina. And if you look at the grant and you look at the progress reports, it is not gain-of-function, despite the fact that people tweet that.
Oh, it wasn't just on Twitter. It was in Fauci's own emails. In retrospect, that looks a lot like perjury. We do know that starting early last year, a lot of people at NIH were worried that COVID had not occurred naturally. They were concerned it had been instead manipulated in a lab in China. And yet they seemed determined to hide those facts from the public. Again, why? On the afternoon of February 1st last year, Fauci held a conference call with several top virologists. Most of the details of that call remained hidden from public view. They've been redacted. We know the call was related to a document entitled Coronavirus Sequence Comparison. Jeremy Farrar, a British physician who runs a major research nonprofit, reminded everyone on the call that what they said was top secret. Quote, information and discussion is shared in total confidence and not to be shared until agreement on next steps, end quote. In other emails, Jeremy Farrar passed along an article from the website Zero Hedge. That piece suggested the coronavirus might have been created as a bioweapon. We now know that is a more plausible explanation than the one we believed at first and were told by the media, which is that corona came from a pangolin. And yet for the crime of saying that out loud, a more plausible explanation, Zero Hedge was banned from social media platforms. Until recently, you were not allowed to suggest that COVID might be man-made. Why couldn't you suggest that? The fact checkers wouldn't allow it. Why wouldn't they? Because Tony Fauci assured the tech monopolies that the coronavirus could not have been man-made. And so the tech monopolies shut down the topic. Watch Fauci lie.
A group of highly qualified evolutionary virologists look at the sequences there and the sequences in bats as they evolve. And the mutations that it took to get to the point where it is now is totally consistent with a jump of a species from an animal to a human.
That was April 17th, 2020, very shortly into the course of this pandemic. At that point, what Tony Fauci just asserted as known could not conclusively have been known. That was a lie. Tony Fauci suggested that he knew because top researchers had decided conclusively that this must have jumped naturally from an animal to a human being. But again, at that point, he could not have known that. That was dishonest. 2 days after he said that, one of the virologists that Tony Fauci had funded to conduct dangerous coronavirus experiments in Wuhan wrote to thank him for the help. That man, a man called Peter Daszak, complained to Fauci that the American tax dollars he'd taken for these experiments were being, quote, publicly targeted by Fox News reporters. Yet Daszak remained grateful for Tony Fauci's support. Quote, I just wanted to say a personal thank you on behalf of our staff and collaborators, end quote. Now, strangely, most of this specific email from Daszak to Fauci has been redacted, and it was redacted under FOIA Section B7A. That specific exemption to the FOIA law applies to, quote, records or information compiled for law enforcement purposes, but only to the extent that production of those documents could reasonably be expected to interfere with enforcement proceedings. Are Peter Daszak and Tony Fauci under criminal investigation? We can only hope they are. They certainly deserve it. At this point, we can't say for sure. We do know that Fauci hasn't simply lied about the origins of COVID, pretending to know things he could not know. He has also lied about vaccines in key ways. In March of last year, former Obama official Zeke Emanuel wrote to Fauci to ask a very simple question, one that we've asked countless times. Are people who have recovered from COVID generally immune from getting infected with COVID once again? That applies to about 100 million Americans, so it's not a small question. Fauci's response, quote, no evidence in this regard, but you would assume that there would be substantial immunity post-infection. Well, yes, you would assume that. We always have. And in fact, studies now show it is true. People who have had COVID and recovered almost never get sick again from COVID, so they don't need to be vaccinated. Yet to this day, Tony Fauci has never admitted that in public. In his email to Zeke Emanuel, he admitted something else that's also now obvious. Surgical masks, the paper kind all of us wear, don't really work. They offer very little protection from COVID. In fact, at least one study shows they may accelerate transmission of viruses. They are, in short, a form of make-believe. Yet once again, while under oath in public, Tony Fauci claimed precisely the opposite.
You're telling everybody to wear a mask, whether they've had an infection or a vaccine. What I'm saying is they have immunity, and everybody agrees they have immunity. What studies do you have that people that have had the vaccine or have had the infection are spreading the infection? If we're not spreading the infection, isn't it just theater?
No, it's not.
You had the vaccine and you're wearing two masks. Isn't that theater?
No, that's not. Here we go again with the theater. Let me just state for the record that masks are not theater. Masks are protective. And we
have immunity there, theater. If you already have immunity, you're wearing a mask to give comfort to others. You're not wearing a mask because of any sign.
I totally disagree with you.
Rand Paul is a physician. He's smart. What he just said was true, and the science shows that it's true. There's not much debate about it, actually, among honest people. But Tony Fauci claimed it wasn't true. He lied. Why would he do that? Well, here's one reason. The emails show that Tony Fauci speaks regularly to Bill Gates. That's odd. Bill Gates is not a doctor. Bill Gates is not a scientist. Bill Gates is a very rich man who made billions making mediocre software for office computers. So why would Tony Fauci be in such regular contact with Bill Gates? The term Bill Gates comes up more than two dozen times when you search the Fauci emails. Has Bill Gates profited in any way from Tony Fauci's COVID guidance? That would definitely be worth knowing immediately. And yet we don't know. Our media don't seem interested in finding out. In fact, here's how CNN covered the emails today. Quote, thousands of emails from and to Dr. Fauci revealed the weight that came with his role as a rare source of frank honesty within the Trump administration's COVID-19 task force. Can you imagine a more dishonest characterization of anything than that? It's hard to. By the way, it wasn't just CNN. No reporters asked about these emails at today's White House press briefing. Not one question. But you shouldn't be surprised. Of course they didn't ask. Tony Fauci is too big to question at this point. Quote, oh my God, one Biden voter wrote to Tony Fauci back in March. Is there anything I can do for you besides being grateful? Wash my feet with your tears, Fauci may have responded. We can't say that he did respond that way for certain. We don't have his reply. We do know that in affluent neighborhoods throughout Northwest Washington, D.C., you can still see signs that say, thank you, Dr. Fauci. What does that tell you? It tells you that Tony Fauci is no longer a scientist, assuming he ever was one. Tony Fauci is a figure of religious veneration. He is Jesus for people who don't believe in God.
He attacked Fauci, rightfully so. And Fauci is wrong and has been delivering a lot of ill advice to both presidents, and the White House is still behind him. My gosh. This is something that goes back to the X-Files, and it sort of predicted this whole pandemic or plandemic that's unfolding. And then we're going to get to Erica Kahn, interviewed by Jeff, and they're going to talk about the possible shedding aspect of this and also about the damage that could possibly result to P53, the gene P53, which is guarding us in many ways. So here we go with an X-Files comment, a little over a minute. Here we go now, predicting some of this pandemic. Here we go next.
What are they trying to do?
That's the missing piece, but it's not hard to imagine. Driven not only by corporate greed, but a darker objective, the takeover of America. And then the world itself, by any means necessary, however violent, or cruel, or efficient, by severe drought, brought up by weather wars conducted secretly using aerial contaminants and high-altitude electromagnetic waves in a state of perpetual war to create problem, reaction, solution scenarios to distract, enrage, and enslave American citizens at home. With tools like the Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act, which abridge the Constitution in the name of national security. The militarization of police forces in cities across the U.S., the building of prison camps by the Federal Emergency Management Agency with no stated purpose, the corporate takeover of food and agriculture, pharmaceuticals and healthcare, even the military in clandestine agendas to fatten, dull, sicken, and control a populace already consumed by consumerism.
And I encourage you to go shopping more.
A government that taps your phone, collects your data, and monitors your whereabouts with impunity. A government preparing to use that data against you when it strikes. And the final takeover begins.
The takeover of America.
By a well-oiled and well-armed multinational group of elites that will cull, kill, and subjugate.
Since 9/11, this country has been proceeding towards a police state. We must become awoke and really awake as to actually what's really going on. Next is Erica Kahn and her ideas. She's a nanotechnologist, and she knows about these vaccines, and she's making comments about a possible shedding problem and other aspects. And then there's a second small clip on the gene P53. Here we go with Erica Kahn.
We essentially have now, if this thing is spreading, and it appears that it is, there's going to be an endless source of this chimeric adenovirus in the environment indefinitely.
So, okay, when you say spreading, apparently people who are being injected with the J&J and the AstraZeneca are now transmitting, broadcasting this attenuated, maybe it's recovered, adenovirus, which could be combining with other things in your body to become a chimera. In other words, it's your body is not just a factory for producing synthetic spike proteins, but potentially throwing off these chimeric adenoviruses. Correct?
Yes, I don't think it has the. It's less likely than the Moderna or the Pfizer with its little segment of mRNA. I think
right.
To recombine with an existing virus, but. You know, we don't know. I mean, what's happening at the, you know, nanoscale inside somebody's cell? Who knows? It could be anything. But these things are shedding. There's no doubt about it. There's enough reports of people having come into contact with vaccinated people who are getting seriously ill. I mean, bedridden ill. There was a story of a woman that came into contact with a person working at a deli in a supermarket, and apparently when the transaction was taking place, handing the cheese or the cold cuts over the counter, they did have skin contact. And the next day, the customer became deathly ill and wound up in the hospital for 2 weeks from this transient exposure from a vaccinated person.
Wow.
And I'm hearing stories like that daily.
What was the diagnosis?
Yeah, this is just a sniffle.
Excuse me. What was the diagnosis of the person who was hospitalized after being exposed? Did they come up with anything that they released?
It wasn't revealed what was wrong,
no,
but it was some sort of life-threatening infection or something that needed medical intervention to assist her.
Got it. But
I'm hearing this from now many people, particularly medical practitioners and clinicians who are coming into contact with these vaccinated people during the course of a day as a part of their practice. And
right.
And they're not well. And in some cases they get sick to the point where they've got to go to bed for a few days and try to get over it. So this is not just a little sniffle or a minor cold or a headache. These people are really getting sick with something.
And, okay, what are the possibles? Synthetic spike protein, possibly
yep.
a chimeric or altered hybrid adenovirus, which is a recombinant virus, which I'm assuming that it's attenuated when they're injecting it in people, but what's to keep it from replicating? Supposedly it can't, but what's to keep it from replicating? It seems like it would almost have to, unless the actual injection is full of billions of these attenuated, non-replicatable adenoviruses. But let's just say that they recover from being weakened and attenuated and become strong, and they're thrown off and shed through the skin, through through your breath, through a cough, a sneeze, sweat, all body fluids. It just sounds like to me someone planned a very sophisticated multi-layer attack on the human species, a fatal attack. These are going to kill people, ultimately, and probably already are.
Yeah, they've known about this. There's two different... Let's talk about the transmissible vaccines that they've been looking at for a number of years. There's attenuated, which when you take the wild natural virus and you weaken it in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really what we're talking about here now. We're talking about an actual recombinant virus that has the genes removed, supposedly, that will allow it to replicate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that enough of those genes are being taken out, because it's got to be somewhat infective, but it's not supposed to be productive.
It seems like a pretty damn fine line, doesn't it?
the intention was in developing this technology is, and you can look at in Nature magazine, the publication Nature, it's a peer-reviewed science journal, July 2020, there was an article entitled Self-Disseminating Vaccines to mm-hmm. Suppress Zoonosis. And
right.
It goes into
that.
Great detail.
Yes.
About using these vector vaccines, these recombinant vector vaccines, with the intention of having them be transmissible so that you don't have to vaccinate an entire population. Now, the question is, how transmissible do you want to make them? And there's some options. We can make them one degree of infection or infectious, meaning mm-hmm. the person that's vaccinated can transmit it to the first set of people or the first in their proximity.
First contact.
And it won't go beyond.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And if
first
it's truly transmissible.
First
layer of contact, yes. So that's called a transferable vaccine. A transmissible vaccine is the vaccinated person can infect the person who comes into contact with them, and then that person can turn around and infect more people. That's a transmissible vaccine.
Got it.
And it sounds great. You know, if you want to wipe out rabies, that sounds
yeah.
great. But the problem
yeah.
is that these viruses are prone to evolution. They don't stay the same. And they believe, and this is a completely speculative, and it's an assumption because it hasn't been proven one way or another, they believe that the virus will just weaken and peter out during this process of so-called evolution. But there's no proof that it can't go the other way and actually evolve to be more pathogenic and virulent under certain conditions. So I am not really sure what we're looking at here. Certainly the people that come in direct contact with a vaccinated person are being infected with something. Now, whether they can turn around and give it to somebody else, I can think of one anecdotal case where, yes, that did happen, where the husband was at work all week with a bunch of vaccinated people. He got sick and was able to transmit whatever that was to his wife the next day. That tells me it's transmissible, not just transferable, but transmissible.
I agree. How else can you?
Yeah.
Assess it.
So it's not an abortive infection. It keeps
yeah.
going. And I think what they've unleashed on us is a real horror of a virus. Being that, you know, that this adenovirus is not easily neutralized or killed, if you want to say that, even though it's not alive, but it's not easily,
Eradicated.
Dealt with, eradicated or just neutralized or whatever from the environment. It's persistent.
We're dealing here with a very dangerous situation. Now, Erica also makes a short comment on the P53 gene, which is a tumor suppressant type of mechanism in the body that's very important to counter cancer cells. Here we go with her small, short comment on that. Erica Kahn again.
I haven't seen much on the influence of the spike protein on how it regulates or dysregulates that P53 protein, but the P53 protein is the guardian of the genome, so it basically decides if there's too much damage in a cell, whether it can be repaired or the cell should commit apoptosis and be disposed of. So when there are things affecting that P53 gene, you've got problems. But these vaccines in and of themselves are a burden to the immune system. Their mechanism of action is very dysregulating. Basically the immune system is hijacked for the sole purpose of generating antibodies to a very specific antigen, in this case, the spike protein. And so I think for a period of time, maybe indefinitely, it's consumed now with dealing with the effects of these injections at the expense of normal housekeeping.
When she said housekeeping, normal housekeeping, she meant that this, what's going on, could overwhelm the autoimmune system and then allow other infectious types of diseases to rise up. So that's a real danger. Next, we've got Rand Paul questioning the head of the Small Business Administration. And what is happening there is this lady is really avoiding the answers. Isabel Guzman is head of the Small Business Administration, and she's beginning to just avoid and ignore some of the questions that Rand Paul is asking. And he says, are you in defiance of this oversight committee? So here we go next with that.
Senator Paul. Administrator Guzman, I've sent two letters to you signed by 50% of the committee members requesting specific information regarding PPP loans to Planned Parenthood affiliates. We have not gotten a response so far. How many first draw PPP loans have been approved to Planned Parenthood affiliates?
So specifically on specific borrowers, the SBA has not commented on specific borrowers.
Well, I'm asking you. I'm in charge of oversight over your trillion-dollar agency, and I'm asking you, how many have been approved?
We don't publicly release that information. And one thing.
So you are in defiance of Congress. You will do what you want, not what Congress wants.
We have provided you a full listing. The
you have not provided us with any listing of Planned Parenthood affiliates who've received money. This is an ongoing problem. The previous administration said it was unlawful. This is a big deal. The previous administration said it was unlawful and told them to return the money. Your administration is now giving them money. This is a legal question. This is a big deal. This isn't something you come to Congress and just say, I'm not going to answer the questions.
Not at all. While I can't discuss specific borrower information, we
No one is stopping you from discussing this. In your written testimony, you discussed an individual recipient of money through the program. So you are willing to talk about individual recipients. You're just not willing to talk about Planned Parenthood. But there is a legal question here. We want to know how many first draw loans were given. We want to know how many second draw loans. We want to know, since Patrick Kelly, your associate, came here and told us that the affiliate rule has not been reversed. The affiliate rule predated, as far as I'm concerned, the Trump administration. It goes back decades because it was done to protect small businesses. So small business programs were supposed to go to small businesses, not big businesses. So Planned Parenthood has 16,000 employees. The previous administration determined that they're a big business. And yet you continue to give them money, and you won't tell us how much you're giving. You won't tell us if you've reversed your policy. have you reversed the longstanding affiliate policy that has been part of the Small Business Administration for decades?
No, we have not. And if I may, what we did provide to you is the full listing of all of the PPP loans. So it wasn't, we don't have a specific PPP file, but we did provide to your staff the full listing so that you could look at all of that information, including any Planned Parenthood. Specifically on the affiliation rule, nothing has changed with that regard. However, what I would say is that on affiliation, what applies here is management.
Apparently the data you sent us that was in collection was sent months ago and doesn't include the new loans. So we want to know about the new loans. I think we discovered the old loans, and now we'd like to know about the new loans. But then we have to have an answer. If it's illegal, according to the Small Business Office, to give money to Planned Parenthood, how did it become legal if you haven't changed the policy? So the previous administration said they are a big business. They said give the money back. You're giving money to the people that the small administration said it was illegal to give money to. That is a conundrum. That is a real problem.
And if I could speak to that letter was not a policy statement. It was not processed. In fact, the letter doesn't exist in SBA systems as it's not The letter that you referenced before and your letters to us about this issue specifically. And so we don't have.
But what are you talking about? The letter, what letter are you talking about? You're talking about the policy?
Which I would say is not a policy. How PPP.
So you're saying that the previous administration, when they denied funds to Planned Parenthood, they did not refer to a policy? They did not refer to the affiliate policy, which is the saying the affiliate policy is not a policy?
The affiliation rule is a policy. What they were referring to was general. The affiliation rule, as we shared with you in our recent letter to you, and I apologize, that was yesterday, so I'm not sure if you've had a chance to review it, but affiliation arises under certain under certain circumstances. Some of them don't apply to nonprofits in the case of ownership or board stock options or relations, identity of interest, which is more for foundations. But where this does apply is on management, and that's either where there's control of the officers.
But you can see how common sense would dictate that you would put something forward saying that you've now reinterpreted the policy to say Planned Parenthood is no longer a big business but a small business.
Well,
because you're working in direct contradiction to the previous Small Business Administration that said they are a big business. They went through all the same rules you're listing for me, and they concluded that, yes, Planned Parenthood had direct control over the affiliates, that the policies and the actions were dependent on the national branch, and that they did not meet the definition of a small business. And so you are aware that not only is Planned Parenthood a politically controversial agent, entity, but it's also one that the rest of government has controls on. We have put the Hyde Amendment in for decades to try to prevent taxpayer money from paying for abortion. Mm-hmm. But now you're going around the Hyde Amendment, giving them money, but then you're also reclassifying them as not a big business, as a small business, but you're not being forthright.
And if I may, I did not say that I'm not judging on the policy specifically with affiliation for a specific borrower, because again, we do not do that. I'm sharing the affiliation rule with you, for your guidance. However, basically the borrowers attest to certain eligibility and the lenders can rely on that attestation. The SBA doesn't directly,
but they were ruled illegal by the Small Business Administration, and you're reversing that policy and you're saying, oh, we don't ever look at this. Somebody else, it's a self-attestation. Well, someone determined that they were illegally getting the money and told them to get it back, and now they're getting the money. I don't know how that can happen without an explanation from the Small Business
Administration. And then just to add on to that, the point at which SBA would look at that would be at the point of forgiveness. And so that prior, relationship is attestation by the borrower to the lender.
But that's not the way, when I think it was Patrick Kelly, when he testified, he said you had thousands of ones that you had reviewed for honesty and whether or not they had been honest in it. And there were lists of people that hadn't been. And apparently Planned Parenthood was on the list. They're still on the list. So they're on a list of people illegally getting it. The policy was send it back, and now you're sending them more. You can see how it doesn't make sense to us. And then you're unwilling to comment on it, and you're unwilling to give us information. So my conclusion is that you believe you are above the law. And my only conclusion is that we still want the information. We are here for oversight, that our next step would be to subpoena you. But that doesn't, that's a disappointment to me, because when I voted for you, I thought you said you would be transparent, and it looks like you're specifically hiding this information from us.
And I just one other thing to note is that, again, as we go through forgiveness and the SBA then starts to look at these loans, that's when, you know, hold codes can arise as well. Under those circumstances, you know, we'd be happy to continue to work with your staff to provide further information. But again, you know, SBA at this point in those loan processes is obviously relying on the attestation of the borrowers as well as the lenders.
So today, no Planned Parenthood has been forgiven. No Planned Parenthood loan has been forgiven.
That's correct.
So you know the information. You're not willing to reveal it. So you know all about their information. The record should state you're unwilling to give the information to Congress.
Are these agencies and whatever, administration, just off on their own doing what they damn well please? It appears that way. Next is Kyle Bass being interviewed by Epoch Times special. And he's talking about a purchase of 130,000 acres close to Del Rio. And also that's within 30 miles of the border and being a very dangerous situation, by being purchased by a top Chinese communist general. So here we go with Kyle Bass. Boy, we're getting dangerous here. This is in Texas, by the way. Here we go next with Kyle Bass.
You know, Kyle, I've been looking through your recent testimony to the Texas Senate, and frankly, it's hair-raising. And just let me see if I've got this straight, okay? So you've got a former People's Liberation Army general billionaire who has bought over 130,000 acres of Texas land, including a giant wind farm, in an area where there isn't particularly a lot of wind, that happens to be right beside a very sensitive military, U.S. military installation.
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, it's kind of hard to believe that we're talking about this and that it actually happened, but it's already happened. I was flying down to the Devil's River area of Texas. When you think about the Texas map, it's the southern region of Texas where the bend is, essentially. It's just south of where that bend is. And it's right on the U.S. border with Mexico, which also you didn't mention, but is actually functionally relevant or germane to this conversation. And we'll get to why. But one of the other things you didn't mention is there was a 4,000 or 5,000 foot runway there where the Chinese general's expanding it to, we think, 10,000 feet. I flew over and took pictures, which I'll happily share with you. But you know, this is happening inside the United States, and this general is actually interfacing directly with the critical infrastructure of the United States, i.e. my view, and this is my view only, not our country's view yet, but my view is that the reason that he bought the wind farm and wants to put up 700 foot turbines is he plugs directly into our electric grid. Well, plugging directly into our electric grid is something that should never happen. Whether you're from a Chinese general or a North Korean general or an Iranian general or a Russian general, you should be precluded from buying property next to our busiest Air Force training base and plugging directly into our grid. So I was flying to that area of Texas, and the person that picked me up at the landing strip was taking me to look at some properties out there, and he casually pointed across the front of the cab and pointed at the gate and said, that's where the Chinese headquarters in Texas happens to be. And I said, excuse me? And I thought he was kidding, of course. And he said, no, you know, that's where they're building their main facility and the runway for their big wind farm project down here. And I said, stop the car. And he said, no, they have cameras everywhere. They'll come after me. And I said, we're in Texas. Stop the car. No one's coming after you here. He was generally frightened that I forced him to stop the car in front of this gate. The insidious nature of what's going on, believe it or not, you know, I have photos of me standing at the gate. The name of this piece of property that is their headquarters is called the Morningstar Ranch. And if you remember in the Bible, the devil's name is Lucifer Morningstar. And you should see the obtuse star that denotes the landmark of this ranch. It's just, again, it's almost like made for TV fiction. You couldn't make this up if you tried. But anyway, I investigated and realized that, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, the wind assets in that region of the United States and Southern Texas is like, between a 2 and a 3 out of 10. And if you and I were investing and buying big wind turbines and wanted to put them somewhere, Jan, we'd look for two things. We would look for major wind factors, and then we'd also look for transmission equipment to be able to transmit it somewhere to sell it. We would never build a wind farm where this one is. And so there's a strategic reason this general has acquired all of this land, and he did it, again, in an insidious way. He got a local businessman out of Lufkin, Texas, to front for him and purchase all the properties. So none of the landowners knew they were selling to a Chinese general. And then in all one fell swoop, he flipped it to the general. 130,000 acres, to put that into context, is 200 square miles. Right? Just think about that for a second. 200 square miles of property. We have a Chinese general who owns 2/3 of the real estate in the capital of Xinjiang, where the concentration camps are for the ethnic Uyghurs. And he now owns 200 square miles of Texas land between one of our most active Air Force bases and the border of the U.S. and Mexico.
So before we continue, I wanted to tell everybody about our premier digital video platform, Epoch TV. That's where you can find all our exclusive content as well as the full episodes. You can subscribe at epochtv.com/ATL. I'm sure for everyone who's listening, I imagine this can be very, very hard to believe. I remember in the testimony, I mean, when I read the part that his interests control 2/3 of the capital of Xinjiang's real estate market. I mean, you know, can you even imagine that this person isn't deeply, deeply connected to the Chinese Communist Party?
I mean, he has 6,000 CCP members that work for him. His two closest advisors are also ex-PLA generals. He runs 40 local branches of the CCP, grassroots branches. I mean, we've done some investigations into this general soon, and it's hard to believe, but it's happening. And when you see this runway expansion, you wonder why on earth. I mean, it looks like one of those runways on the islands of the South China Sea, you know, all the islands that China claimed they would never militarize. Right? Xi Jinping said to President Obama, we'll never militarize those islands. The next thing you know, they've got missile batteries and fighter jets and bombers on these 10,000-foot runways.
Well, and so tell me the significance of having such a large runway, you know, private runway in the middle of Texas. Like, is it common to have runways like this for people to have set runways like this across the country?
So in remote areas of the United States, people that have large land holdings will sometimes build their own landing strips. The enormity of this particular strip is a head scratcher, because you can land just about every single, even very large private plane on a runway that's 6,000 feet long or less. My pilots decided that said that this runway looked like it was about 10,000 feet long. So it was abnormally large. But again, why are we allowing, people from China, Russia, Iran, or North Korea to build runways in the United States next to our border or next to our air bases? You know, they are 10 miles from this air base. 10 miles is nothing. Think about, in an airplane, 10 mile in an airplane traveling 600 miles an hour, how long does it take to go 10 miles? Literally a handful of seconds. So I think it's relevant. I don't know the full relevance. I truly don't know the full relevance of the runway, other than it doesn't make any sense. But the relevance of the wind farm is, again, It interfaces and plugs directly into Texas's power grid. And you probably, everyone's aware of what happened in January with the Texas power grid and how Texas is the only state that runs its own grid, right? The United States has a purview or regulatory oversight of over the rest of the grids. Texas happens to be proud of their grid, and it doesn't want the U.S. interfering with their grid, and yet we have a Chinese PLA general plugging directly into our grid. Now, there's plenty of instances of malware. If you look at the GAO report that was recently released that I included as a footnote in my testimony, we are fully certain that the Chinese and the Russians, the North Koreans and Iranians want to disrupt our critical infrastructure. We are certain that they want to do that and that they have the capacity to do it. We mustn't ever allow them to interface directly with these things, whether it is our layer one phone system, you know, layer one phone interconnections on the telco side, or whether it's our waste and water treatment systems or our nuclear power systems, our nuclear power plants, or our electric grids. We just need to keep them out. It's a basic understanding of how you protect national security. And so it's just fascinating to me to see kind of how this sausage is made and how GH America got formed, and how he was able to buy all these properties. He still owns these properties as we sit here today, Jan. Now, this bill went through both the House and the Senate in Texas, and to put it under context, after the Senate bill testimony was heard, I brought General Spaulding and Patrick Genovine, who beat Avik in court, to testify with me. We passed 31-0. So we got every Republican and every Democrat to agree that this was a bad idea.
There you go. That's just about the end of it, of our program for this weekend. It's getting dangerous out there. We've had the G7 come together, and they're going to put a 15% tax on all the corporations throughout the world. We've got other things that are happening, too. Yesterday was the 32nd anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. And I was part of the protest movement at the University of Texas in 1989. And I spoke on the fall of 89 on the Western Mall steps there and gave a very impassioned speech. And that's up on our site, thesecrettruth.com. And then also, I'm going to put up a poem to commemorate tomorrow, which is D-Day. A friend of mine wrote a poem about a man in a wheelchair watching a parade. And I'm going to put that up for the first time in several years. And we're going to have that be the highlight of the page. But also, come into thesecrettruth.com, and we're going to put the full interview with Erica Kahn. We're going to put the full interview up with Kyle Bass. And so you'll be able to hear in totality more than just the clips that we have up. And anyway, I want to thank each and every one of you out there for listening. There's a whole lot more going on out there than can be even covered. You know, I think we've got the Belmont Stakes today, later on this evening, late afternoon. I think Trump is out there on the speaking trail there again. Oh, also, Alex Jones was way ahead over a year ago on this virus and where it was developed in the University of North Carolina. Francis Borrell was there being interviewed. He testified back in January of 2020 as to who had developed that and sold it to the Chinese Wuhan lab. So we've got to give full credit to Alex Jones being way ahead of everybody else. Now it's hitting the press, the mainstream press, over a year later. But anyway, it is getting out. But thank God for Alex and Francis Ball and their hard work. Thank you and good night. And God bless each and every one of you. Good night. Bye-bye.